My wife says to me, what if nobody comes? I said, I did 65 episodes in that little shed at Christian.com. There was never anybody there. No, it didn't matter to me.
Hare Krishna. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Excuse me. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. 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 Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Om Jnana Tamananda Syanjanam Jana Shilakaya Chakshuhin Namitam Yenatasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripartamaham Bande Sri Guru Nidinitarina. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Vedanta Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The lives of our Vaishnava Acharyas are two things for us. They're historical information, but they're also devotional inspiration. Our acharyas, by definition, the word acharya, are teaching by their example. And their example is not, as we've heard repeatedly from the pastimes of Narottam Das Thakur, Ramchandra Kaviraj, Mahaprabhu himself, their example is not based upon the external particular appearance or bodily conditioning that they may come in. This is why we find in the history of our acharyas, men and women, there's no big deal. Sometimes this question comes up. Can women be advanced in Krishna consciousness? Can women be gurus, whatever? I mean, the question we should obviously be asking is, can men be advanced in Krishna consciousness? Can men be gurus? Can anybody be advanced in Krishna consciousness? Can anybody be a guru? And the answer is very simply, absolutely not. Without the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Acharyas. So this is the standard at which we follow in our devotional line. One such personality that I wanted to speak about tonight that's always been very near and dear to me and I've always enjoyed her pastimes is Gangamata Goswamini. Gangamata Goswamini is maybe not as well known by many devotees, but as far as Vaishnava history and pastimes and, you know, placement within our sampradaya, very, very well known. So she's actually, her initiation comes in the line of Gadadhar Pandit. Gadadhar Pandit, of course, is the expansion of the personal internal shakti of Lord Gauranga. And his prominent disciple, Gadadhar Pandit's prominent disciple, was a man by the name of Ananta Acharya. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami speaks about Ananta Acharya. He says, an Ananta Acharya, disciple of Gadadhar Pandit, was always absorbed in love of Godhead, always magnanimous, and advanced in all respects. He was a reservoir of all good qualities. No one can estimate how great he was. If at the time, you know, sometimes people say, so when you're, you know, when you pass away from this world, what would you like people to say about you? Oh, I'd like them to say, oh, look, there he is. He was such a magnanimous person, so kind. Oh, look, there he is. He was so wonderful to his family and such a good community leader. Oh, look, he's moving. So, all right, that didn't work. At any rate, these qualities given here of Gadadhar Pandit's disciple, Anantacharya, are the type of qualities we all aspire for. Advanced in all respects, magnanimous to others, a reservoir of good qualities, always absorbed in love of God. So, very wonderful personality. His most beloved disciple was Haridas Pandit. Now, sometimes people say, Haridas Pandit? I don't think I've ever heard his name. But there's that famous song of all the different temples in Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami Prandana Hai, Gopal Bhatta Prandana Hai. Well, Haridas Pandit is in there because he was the servant of the Govindaji deity. He was the chief servitor there. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami continues on with more glorification of him. His qualities and fame were known all over the world. He was very gentle, very tolerant, very peaceful, very grave, very sweet in his words, and very sober in his endeavors. Those last two were difficult things for us in this day and age. Be sweet-spoken and to be very sober in what we do, because this nature of this age is quarrel and hypocrisy, so always something on the edge is always right there if we don't control ourselves. And to be sober, frivolity is the way of modern society. Just so much frivolity. So these things were not present in Haridas Pandit. He was respectful to everyone and worked for the benefit of all. Diplomacy, envy, and jealousy were unknown to his heart. The 50 general qualities of Lord Krishna were present in his body. Now, diplomacy seems to be a pretty important qualification. You know, if you're having to deal with large number of issues, or, you know, from a government side, if you're dealing with different countries and different types of leaders, or from a business side, if you've got to deal with different managers in different departments, and put it, so it seems like you would need to be diplomatic. And it's probably accurate. But such diplomacy is considered a bad quality because it requires some adapting and adjusting what the truth is. Well, sadhu is known as one who cuts. He gives very frank statements. At any rate, these are the qualities of Haridas Pandit. And Haridas Pandit was the guru of Gangamata Goswami. So she's directly connected in the line of Mahaprabhu, just four generations away. Mahaprabhu, Gadadhar Pandit, Ananta Acharya, Haridas Pandit, and then her. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in his Anubhasya, he mentions that Anantacharya, further giving glorification, Anantacharya's identity, and this is confirmed in Gaura Gonadeshapika, was Sudevi of the Gopis, the prominent Gopis. So, you know, very, very elevated personality. Haridas Pandit himself was known as Rasamanjari, one of the Manjari Gopis. So Haridas had two very prominent disciples. One of them was Lakshmi Priya Mata, and the other one was Ganga Mata. So a little bit of early history about Ganga Mata. There's in the state of Bengal, there was a kingdom that was ruled over by Naresh Narayana. Naresh Narayana was a very, very magnanimous personality, always looking after the welfare of his subjects, always trying to see that everyone was nicely engaged. Very, very nice wife who had the same mood as him. And King Naresh had a very wonderful daughter, only one child. Excuse me. That daughter's name was Sachi. From Sachi's early childhood, She was considered to be a very serious devotee of the Lord. You know, sometimes we see that with these little kids, you know. It's like, wow, I have the opportunity to speak on the Vaishnavacharyas at the Banner School, and I see some of these kids, and I'm like, wow, who are they? Where were they in their last birth, you know? So Sachi was like this from her early childhood, very, very serious devotee. And, you know, in due course of time, she started her education. And during the course of her education, she very diligently absorbed herself in grammar and poetry and became very expert at these things. But she very quickly lost an interest in these, realized that this grammar, this poetry, this logic, all these things I'm learning, this is not so satisfying and fulfilling. And she began to completely immerse herself endlessly in studying the different shastras of the time. It mentions that even as a young girl, she was completely fascinated with being Krishna conscious. When she was about 5 years old, she began worshiping deities of Krishna, and she would sing to this deity and play with the deity. This is kind of a common thing we see. Jiva Goswami had Krishna Balaram deities, and he was like this, playing with them. They would go out with them and sit on a tree and observe all the playing of all the boys like that. Everything she did throughout the course of her day was for her deity. So as she matured and eventually became about 16 years old, her presence of love of Godhead began to manifest in a very strong way. And she actually began to show certain symptoms of ecstasy at a very young age. And of course, king's daughter, so many good qualities, and she was incredibly beautiful to boot. And she's 16, and all the boys are noticing, and they're all thinking, oh, you know, this would be so wonderful to have her as my wife. And Sachi Mata, in her mind, it did not matter how handsome, how rich, how strong, it didn't matter to her any of these things. She had absolutely no interest. Her mind was simply fixed on Madan Gopal, nothing else. So, very beautiful, very intelligent, qualified in Sanskrit, capable in Bengali, understanding so many scriptures. So the king and his wife, they, you know, we have to get our daughter married. So, you know, they begin to discuss amongst themselves. Somehow or another, the daughters always figure this out. Oh, mom and dad are planning my marriage. Actually, the kids do. Nartam figured it out when his parents were arranging like that, you know. So they began to, you know, discuss and try to make arrangements and start thinking in that direction. Now, understanding her father's intentions, she said, Father, you should know one thing. I will not marry any man that is subject to the world of death. Now, that's a pretty tall order. Matter of fact, I can only think of one person that fits that order. So she said, anybody that's of this mortal world, I'm not going to marry them. Oh, and the king and queen, they wanted to continue in this way to make a marriage. And, you know, they were in quite a bit of anxiety. You know, it's their only daughter, and she's, you know, the apparent heir to the kingdom. And so she told her father, my dear father, my marriage has already been done. Don't worry about anything. There's no need for a second marriage to me. I've already given my heart to Krishna. And I will go to Vrindavan eventually, and he will marry me. So, you know, my beloved is there, and you don't need to worry about it. Ha! The mother and father were completely distressed by this. Completely distressed. Actually, they decided, you know what? We're old. She's refusing to get married. That's it. We're going back to Godhead. They left this world. Mother and father, that's it. We're gone. All our only duty is to take care of the kingdom and get our daughter married. And she doesn't want to get married, and she is capable of taking care of the kingdom, so we're gone. So they passed away. Now, after the passing of the king and the queen, of course, she inherited the kingdom. And the royal succession of everything fell to her. And she was extremely responsible. She accepted all the responsibility and activities of managing and governing the kingdom and was expert at them. Really, really good, you know. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, she just kind of stumbled with it. No, she's very, very good at it. So one day, on the plea of seeing more of the kingdom, You know, I mean, I've only seen just what's here. I should go out and visit my kingdom and see what's what. She left to go to the different places of pilgrimage throughout the kingdom. And she appointed a handful of relatives. Okay, you take care of this, you take care of that, you take care of this, you'll do that. Okay, I'm going now. And she began to wander about here and there throughout the kingdom. And, you know, everywhere she went, she felt a vacancy in her heart. She felt no satisfaction when she would go to these different places of pilgrimage. And so she realized after some time, I'm not able to be satisfied because I've not yet received the mercy of a bona fide spiritual master. So she began to think in this way. And after quite a bit of travel, she happened to arrive in Jagannath Puri, because this portion of Bengal where the kingdom was quite close. Actually, when I was in Mayapur during the 500th anniversary, this is 1986, we took a train to just across Puri, I mean, just across the border of Bengal into Orissa to catch up with Padyatra. It was just a short overnight ride. So, you know, it wasn't that far. So she was taking darshan of Lord Jagannath. And one day after the darshan, Lord Jagannath appeared to her. And Lord Jagannath said, there is but one thing for you to do. You must go to Bengal. So she felt like all blessings had been given to her. Ah, yes. My Lord is in Vrindavan. His pastimes are there. Jagannath has now instructed me. So I'm going to go. So, you know, she got her deities and walked to Vrindavan on foot. 3,000 or 4,000 mile journey. Actually, not quite 3,000 or 4,000 miles. I figured out the other day from Jaipur to, well, yeah, 3,000 or 4,000 miles would be accurate. From Jaipur to Puri is 1,900 kilometers. So about 3,000 miles, say. And she walked. This would have probably taken her, conservatively, I calculated things out with Jai from Padyatra and talked about it. So let's say, you know, maybe just a little bit over 3 months, about 90 days, walking day by day. So eventually she comes to Vrindavan. And when she entered into the land of Vrindavan, all of her devotional happiness and the taste for Krishna consciousness just manifested full-blown. And she became so mad and began searching all throughout Vrindavan trying to find Krishna. Where is he? Where is he? Is he at Bamsibad? Is he under? Is he near Govardhan? You know, she was going around like this, you know? Now, in Vrindavan at that time, as we mentioned, Haridas Pandit was there. And he was a single-minded devotee, very focused on the service of Gauranga and Nityananda. Matter of fact, Chaitanya Charitamrita says elsewhere that his focus and devotion to Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda was unsurpassed. That's a pretty big statement when you look at some of the associates of Mahaprabhu. So he was always engaged in chanting and always engaged in remembering the Lord. And he would give classes regularly. And different bridge bossies and saints and sadhus would all come and attend his classes and hear. Maybe he'd speak here and speak there like that. So Sachi Davis started coming to his classes. She was very attracted to him. Such erudite speaking and such knowledge of the Shastras and such clarity in the presentation of the Siddhanta. She became very, very happy with this. And, you know, just seeing the potency and the austerity that he engaged in, she became just filled with ecstasy. So she meditated for several days in this way and then approached Haridas, asked for shelter. She fell down at his lotus feet and offered obeisances. Her eyes were pouring with tears. And praying for mercy, she said to him, I'm here to take shelter of you. Please give me initiation. If I do not receive initiation from you, I will simply die. My life will be useless. I want to see Krishna. I want to serve Krishna. I want to be with Radha and Krishna. And I know that I cannot do this if I do not get a bona fide spiritual master. So hearing this, Haridas Pandit became very happy. Oh, very qualified individual. But, you know, it's not recommended that the guru should just take so easily. So we wanted to test such. See what her qualifications to be a disciple were. So he said to her, that's nice, that's nice. But, you know, it's not possible for the daughter of a king to come here to Vrindavan and, you know, live as a poor devotee, constantly doing bhajan and, you know, very little to eat and no personal comforts. It's better you go back home to your kingdom and stay there. And, you know, coming to Vrindavan is just not the proper thing. So Sachi Devi, you know, she was the ruler. You know, she had ruled the kingdom. She could understand what was going on. She was not, you know, unintelligent in these regards. And she understood, okay, this is a test. He's testing me. So she completely ignored these discouraging words from him. And it mentions that after speaking that initial time with Haridas, her determination became as fierce as a lion. Her renunciation became as vast as the ocean, and her austerity was unchallenged in any realm. So she would continue to do her bhajan each day and think in her mind of service as she could do to her guru. The austerities that she absorbed herself in, step by step, everything, just whittling it all down. First, she gave up all of her opulent dress, and she gave up all of her jewels, and then she gave away all of her hair ornaments, and then any kind of nice thing, she gave all that away. And she just lived very simply in this way. Now one day, Haridas Pandit Goswami, he called Sachi Devi and he said, If you like, you can give up all pride and fear, and then you can wander around Braj and practice begging from one place to another like a true renounced devotee. You have my blessings to do that. So this was the only instruction he gave to her so far. Aside from that little bit of a challenge, now he says to her, okay, be a mendicant, travel around, do Madhukari, my blessing for you to do that. She was very, very happy to hear this. It says that the joy she felt in her heart about receiving direct instructions from Haridas Pandit held no bounds. It was completely amazing to her. So she continued on this way, freed herself from all false ego. She covered her body only in rags that she would pick up here and there. You know, she mentions that like a bumblebee that goes from one flower to the other. This time of year we get to see that, you know, the gardens here, we've all got gardens at our homes and the bees come. I was out doing some work yesterday and I have a jasmine plant that's in full bloom. And I could hear them. And the bee was just going from one flower to the next. So like that, you know, the bee that goes around like that, she went from house to house dressed in these rags begging alms. And she showed such intense renunciation and austerity that everyone could easily appreciate she's a very highly advanced devotee. All the devotees in Vrindavan were completely astounded by how severe her renunciation was. Well, we can just see this. Gradually, this is one thing we don't talk about much, like when we discuss the six Goswamis and how they gave up eating and sleeping and lived under a different tree each night, and you know, we don't mention the impact such lifestyle has on the physical body. Of course, we know these great acharyas, they have no physical body. Their body is pure spiritual. But for the sake of the pastimes they represent, this physical body suffers in that way. Sanatana Goswami got so many sores when he was traveling to Puri from Vrindavan. And, you know, there's many examples of this. So in the same way, from these very severe austerities and renunciation, she can be very frail and very weak. And she grew very thin and looked as if she was covered in soot. We've been to Vrindavan, you know, you see sometimes these older widow ladies, you know, I mean, you have no idea how advanced they are, you know. I mean, they're getting up very early in the morning and with so many types of arthritis and, you know, bodily aches and pains, who can imagine? And they just completely disregard it and go about visiting the different temples and doing their seva. And their saris are all there in white. But, you know, they've got one, two pieces of cloth and they wash it in water and then put the other one on. And so it's not like they're throwing it in the washing machine on the heavy rinse cycle with some Tide and a little fabric softener. Okay, put it over here in the dryer with the little fabric, what's that fabric thing that gives it a nice little fresh smell of linen. You know, I mean, I've seen it, you know, they just rinse it out, shake it out, throw it on a line, and, you know. So as a result, it's not very bright white. Not going to get any television commercials for laundry products with these. So it has kind of a soot color. And so she had this kind of appearance. She took no notice of this condition. Didn't even cross her mind. It didn't even register in her thoughts that this was something, you know. She just continued to follow this very austere regimen. Under 25. Yeah. She would be physically exhausted as a result of this traveling all around and not eating and pushing and like that. You know, we've all experienced that, you know, if you don't rest enough and don't eat enough and, you know, by the end of, you know, it's like on Janmashtami, you know, by the end of the night, if we've been doing stuff all day and we're all fasting, of course, hardly anybody fasts anymore, but I'm not going to go there. at any rate, so, you know, you get very tired. So in the same way, she was just simply exhausted. And she would just sleep on the banks of the Jamuna, you know, find some tree or some place where there might be a little ghats there and sleep there and then get up the next morning and go to whatever temple she was close to and clean the temple like that. Regularly, she circumambulated all the holy places. She would go and see the arti ceremony of the different deities. She would listen to Srimad Bhagavatam lectures wherever she came across them. I was having a conversation in this particular regards. I was having a conversation once with Vishwambhar Goswami, the previous predecessor to the temple of Radharamanji, Padmanabh Goswami's father. And I said to him, I said, you know, we're going around to all these different places and pilgrimage, visiting this temple and that temple. And, you know, before Prabhupada came to America, he lived here in Vrindavan like a Brijbasi. He said, yes, he also did all these things you're doing. He would go to this temple and that temple. And he told me one story. He said that when Prabhupada lived just down the street there, what's it, the Radha Gokulananda or something? Yeah, just down the street from the Radharaman temple, he said he had a bicycle. And he said that bicycle had a particularly squeaky tire. And at that time, Vishwambhar Goswami's room was right on the front quarter of the wall at Radharaman temple. And he said Prabhupada would ride by and he could tell, oh, Bhaktivedanta Swami's coming. And he would come, and then he would stick his head out the window, and Prabhupada would ring the bell on his bicycle and wave at him. Did they have this kind of exchange? So, yeah, he said, you know, Prabhupada did like that, went around to these different places. It's kind of nice to envision Prabhupada doing those things, you know. Anyway, Sachimata similarly was a Brijbasi, doing all the things that Brijbasis do and listening to Bhagavatam whenever she came across a discourse. Now, Haridas Pandit's not disconnected at this point. He observes what's going on. He's getting reports from the Brijbasis. They're letting him know he's observing like this. And he sees the intense renunciation of Sachidevi. And his heart just becomes filled with pity. Not pity of, you know, mundane standard, but a devotional desire to do something for it. So in this mood, his extension of his mercy increased more and more. And one day he called her and smiling, he said to her, you are a princess. Yet you have come to make such an intense effort to worship Krishna that seeing your renunciation and your austerity in the cause of devotional service, I have become supremely happy. Soon, I will give you the mantra initiation that you desire. So in this way, just some short days later, on the auspicious day, everything was arranged. She was initiated into the 18-syllable Radha Krishna mantra by him. And this event that mentions it took place in the Govindaji temple and took place on a codicil, very auspicious time. So then Haridas Pandit, he gave Sachi some instructions. He instructed her how to chant properly. He instructed her how to remember the Lord and how to practice devotional service in the line of Rupa Goswami, how to accept Krishna as her beloved and no other in her life, and as a result of that, how to engage in the service of Sri Radhika. So very nice instructions from her spiritual master. So after her initiation, Sachi Devi was always engaged in chanting and feeling all the devotional ecstasies and weeping constantly. She used to chant somewhere beyond 64 rounds a day and was always absorbed when she wasn't chanting and doing service. And Haridas Pandit gave her a particular bhajan kutir. It had a place set aside for her there in Vrindavan. I'm sorry, never gave her a place in Vrindavan. He didn't want her to get comfortable and settled there. But instead, he said to her, you should arrange something for yourself. I have nothing to do with arranging for the comings and goings and managing the well-being of my disciples. This is up to you. So as a result of this, she used to live in one broken down abandoned temple on the bank of the Jamuna. We go there now and we see that there are such places and there's many different sadhus. If you do the Braj, the Vrindavan Parikram, as you approach Keshi Ghat, just passing the Imlatali, there's those arches. And there's sadhus that live in those places. And they're very, very austere, very basic. That's their living place. So she found one such broken down temple on the bank of Jamuna, and she stayed there and performed her bhajan. She never made any arrangement for her prasadam. We're of the platform that we're always attentive to when's the next meal. You know, even if we're out on parikram somewhere, like when I go to Vrindavan, and you know, it's always, okay, next, what time's lunch? When's lunch? Okay. And then there'll be a little snacky at what, 5 o'clock? You know, can I get some hot milk before I go to bed tonight? Somebody got a cookie? This is our visit to Vrindavan. Where's my fruit for breakfast? Nobody brought me any fruit. So Sachi Devi had no considerations like this. She didn't make any arrangements. And sometimes she would go door to door and beg Madhukari. You know, just hold her cloth, knock on the door. Whatever somebody gave. Of course, I've had the experience. You can do that, particularly in Yavat, and you can eat very nicely. The devotees there are so kind. So she would receive a roti from someone, and she would take it and tear it into quarters. One quarter she would keep, and the rest she would give to whatever animals or creatures are there, one quarter of a chapati. She loved everyone, and everyone loved her. You know, she was so well-respected. And everyone came and wanted to give her all kinds of food. Such, oh, Sachi, you haven't eaten yet. Please, here, take this nice sabji we've just cooked at home here. You, no, some sweet rice. She never took any of it. No. Didn't want it. They would come. We just had big family function, and my son has just gotten his upanaya, so we're giving charity. Please take this new sari. No, not taking it. She never took anything. She would only wear whatever worn, torn, white cloth she'd find on the banks of the Ganga. And she was very satisfied. This wasn't a dry renunciation. She was very satisfied by this. Of course, there was no electricity in her dwelling, no facilities of any kind, you know. But because she was constantly hearing and developing her Krishna consciousness, she became even further renounced. As renounced as we're hearing, she became even further renounced. Eventually, Haridas Pandit made some arrangement for her. He told her, he said, you should go to Radhakund. There is the place of Raghunath Das Goswami, and you should do your bhajan there like he has done. You're in that mood, so that's where you should go and do it. Also, I don't want you to be alone out there. It's a little, I mean, this is, you know, a few hundred years ago. It's a little wild out there, you know, not so developed. And so I have one disciple that lives out there. An old woman, her name is Lakshmi Priya. And very affectionate towards her. She's a very nice disciple. It says she was old, but she's only about 50. So what's that make us? Anyway, she was older than Gangamata Goswamini. So, you know, she's living out there. I want you to go and place yourself in her care. She's very mature in her bhajan and in her service and renunciation. So I'm going to place you in her care, just as Mahaprabhu placed Raghunath Das Goswami in the care of Sarup Damodar Goswami. So he said, in that same way, I want you to go out there and stay with her. Now this Srimati Lakshmi Priya Devi, she used to chant 300,000 names of the Lord of Deva. It's 192 rounds. Now, if you calculate, Prabhupada says on one lecture that when we're expert at chanting a japa, it should take about 5 minutes a round. So if you calculate it out at that, you're looking at 16 hours a day of japa. And we're challenged by 16 rounds. 16 hours a day of japa. So Sachi Devi went there, arrived, went to do bhajans on the bank of Radhakund, met with Lakshmi Priya. Taking the order of her guru on her head, she came before Lakshmi Priya, presented, you know, the story from Haridas Pandit, told her what, you know, he desired for her, and Lakshmi Priya was very happy to Oh, yes, it'll be good to have some association. We can have kata, and we can circumambulate Govardhan Hill together. Every day, they circumambulated Govardhan Hill. Doesn't mention if they did Dandabhat Parakram or not, but wouldn't be surprised. So anyway, excuse me. In this way, in the company of Lakshmi Priya, the level of her devotional service, the level of her realization, the level of her determination and renunciation just increased beyond anybody's expectation. And she's living on the banks of Radhakona. Very, very wonderful. So for several years, she lived there, keeping her renunciation, doing Madhuparki, Madhukari, somehow or another maintaining her life. And of course, there was no problem maintaining her life. Who's maintaining everyone's life? Krishna. And Krishna's favorite place is Radhakona. So his devotees come there and live. So say, all right, I'll take care of you. So, you know, she used to perform bhajan day and night. She hardly slept. Hardly slept at all. I just heard an article on a news program about how too little sleep is very detrimental to the well-being of the individual. And they went on with all kinds of scientific studies. This is exactly the opposite of what we're finding with the Goswamis, with these great renounced souls that live in the holy places there. Their whole life is to give up sleeping. Prabhupada describes sleeping as like death. So they were not interested in this at all. So anyway, she stayed there for about 25 years in Braj. And then one day, Haridas Pandit called her and he said, I'm very old now, but I have one service I want you to do. I want you to go to Neelachala, to the Gambira, near the Gambira area of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and you should spend the rest of your days there, never going anywhere else. This will allow you to become perfect in your devotional service. Don't delay, you should go immediately. While you're there, you will discover the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. We talked about Sarvabhauma last week and how Sarvabhauma had his home there. And the rest of this story deeply connects with many of the points we discussed last week. So while you're there, you'll find the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. The home is in complete ruins. No one is taking care of it. Practically nobody even knows it's his house. So I want you to go there, find that place, rediscover it, make a simple temple there, establish the worship, live there, and take the prasadam of Lord Jagannath each day. Now, by this time, Lakshmi Priya had departed from the world. She was, you know, elderly. So she was just by herself, Sachinatha. So she left Vrindavan and traveled all the way to Jagannath Puri. And as we mentioned, you know, we're talking about probably 3 months of travel time. And she traveled. Somehow or another, the super soul within her heart guided her on the same path that Sanatana Goswami took. And he left Vrindavan and went to Jagannath Puri. Many, many, many days. No one could imagine how it is that she managed to arrive there. So when she arrived in Neelachala, in Jagannath Puri, she sought out the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and found it. She was very happy there. So, you know, she performed different types of bhajan and, you know, would do classes there. The house was very run down, not very well kept up. Even if you go there now, compared to the rest of Puri, it's not in such good shape. It's in quite bad disrepair. Unfortunately, the current Saivites are not very favorable to ISKCON or our ISKCON devotees, despite our efforts and extending ourselves to help fix the place up. They want nothing to do with it. Anyway, so, you know, she stayed there and all dilapidated and, you know, she did find one thing there, one very interesting thing. The Damodar Shalagam Shila that was worshipped by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. It was sitting there on the altar, abandoned for who knows how long, just as the house had been completely abandoned. So she began the worship at once of this Shalagam Shila that had been worshipped by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya himself. She made a hut for herself out of leaves and dry branches and lived there, chanted, remembered Krishna, and engaged in the worship of Damodar Shila. I was thinking to myself, I at least want to get the darshan of that Damodar Shila in this lifetime. I thought a few other things too. But so she established very first class worship for Damodar Shila. I mean, this is the personal shalagram that was observed by Mahaprabhu and worshipped by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and who knows how many countless other persons. So according to all the traditional rules and regulations of Shastra, she engaged everything. And then, as I say, in the evening, she would speak about the Bhagavatam, different discussions. And many famous people came to hear her speak. People would actually come from miles around. Oh, so you heard this, Sachi? She is staying, of course, by this. Oh, no, she's not known yet. She's still known as Sachi at this point. So, Sachi Devi, she's staying there. Sarvabhauma Sachi, she gives such great. Let's go to hear the discourse. So, in this way, people came from all over to hear. Now, the king of Jagannath Puri at that time was Mukunda Devi. And Mukunda Devi, he also wanted to hear from Sachi Devi. But he couldn't just go as the king. So, he went in disguise, you know, disguised himself all up. And when she would give class, you know, the topics would move her so much, sometimes it'd be crying and the eyes would fill with tears. And all the residents of Puri became very attached to her, very attracted. And the king, even in his disguise, sitting there, he was like, wow, to hear her original profound explanations of the Shastras, you know, he was completely astonished. So he thought to himself, you know, I'm the king, I should do some nice service for her, I should give some offering to her. She's such a great devotee of the Lord. Out of appreciation of her greatness, I should give something. So, he, you know, he approached her. That night, Lord Jagannath came to the king in a dream. And Lord Jagannath said to him, you should offer Sachi Devi a place on the bank of the Ganga. Now, when we say Ganga here, and we're talking about Jagannath Puri, we're talking about the Sweta Ganga, which is at Kund, just outside the home of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Very large, deep Kund, and just within sight of the Jagannath Temple. So he said, you should offer her a residence there on the bank of the Sweta Ganga. So the following day, King Mukunda Devi got up, and this time he went in his royal presence, and he went to Sachi Devi. And in great humility, he bowed, and Sachi Devi offered him a seat and, you know, asked him, my dear king, why have you, you know, look at this place, why have you come here? He said, I have had a vision from Lord Jagannath, and Lord Jagannath has instructed me to have a place built for you. I want to make that vision come true. Sachi Devi was not at all interested. Completely disposed to any type of wealth or comfort. She just refused. She said, no, I cannot accept that. The king said, no, but this is Jagannath's desire. So time and time again, he would come every night. You know, Jagannath isn't, you know, much, no, I cannot take. And I, you know, Jagannath isn't, no, I cannot take. So she wouldn't take. So after some time, not wanting to violate the instruction of Lord Jagannath to him, he's the king. Jagannath has given him a direct instruction. He again went to Ganga, Sachi Mata, and said to her, he said, you know, I'm issuing a decree. And that decree is that Sachi Devi is a princess who has left everything to come to Jagannath Puri and preach the gospel of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I'm arranging a home for it. End of it. He had a place. So, now one day while she was residing in Jagannath Puri, it was the Mahavaruni Snan, Mahasankranti as they call it. It was approaching and Ganga, Sachi Devi, she thought in her mind, I'd really like to go to the Ganges and take bath. This is the time of year and everybody's doing, I'd really like to do that. Of course, Ganges is 200 miles away. It's not very close. So, yeah, but my Gurudev has forbidden me to leave Jagannath Puri. So, remembering this instruction from Haridas Pandit, she completely gave up the desire. All right, I won't go to the Ganga. So that night, while taking a little rest after chanting endless rounds, Jagannath appeared before her. Jagannath said, Sachi, don't think like you're thinking. The day when Varuni Snan comes, you must go and bathe in the Sweta Ganga, the bathing tank here. Ganga Devi herself has been praying for your association. You must go there to Sweta Ganga and allow her to have your darshan. So she woke up from such an amazing dream, and she was just completely ecstatic. You know, it's the kind of thing you get a calendar out, start putting red X's. Okay, how many more days? Oh, we're almost there. Yay, today's the day. You know, just filled with anticipation and excitement. So the day came for the Sanan, and she went in the middle of the night. She didn't want to go publicly during the day when there would be people around, and, you know, she wanted this to be very personal thing. So she went to Swetha Ganga and began to bathe. As she stepped into the waters, Swetha Ganga, the water itself, which is just in a kund, began to churn and become very, very active and began to flow up one level to the next level, to all the stairs, all the way up to the top, and began to flow out and completely overflooded the pond and picked her up in the waves and began to flow her. And as it was doing, she saw all around her thousands upon thousands of pilgrims from all the different places bathing in the Ganga. She was completely amazed by the sight. And the waves of the Ganga were flowing her towards the Jagannath Mandir, towards the Jagannath Temple. She saw so many wonderful things. All the four directions were filled with the celestial demigods. So much commotion was there. And in the midst of all this, she's getting to bathe in the Ganga. By some kind of magic, Ganga Devi transported her into the sanctum, inner sanctum of Lord Jagannath, behind the locked doors at the feet of Lord Jagannath himself. She entered and she touched the feet of Lord Jagannath. I mean, who wouldn't take that chance? You know, she's there. And now, you know, we have to keep in mind that the Ganges originally comes from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, Jagannath is that Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, when Vamanadeva put his foot up and punctured the universe and it came down. So, you know, this is the source of the Ganga. So Jagannath himself wanted to bring her here. So this was all his desire. So the Ganges came and flowed under the instruction of Jagannath himself, picked Sachi Dev up, and brought her to his lotus feet. She was now there at Jagannath's lotus feet, inside the sanctum, sanctorium, all the doors closed and locked. No one else is there. Now, this, of course, caused a bit of commotion. You know, waves of water splashing around and so many celestial voices. And so the guards, they were woken up, as guards are usually sleeping. They were woken up by all this noise. What's going on? So they were speechless to see so much commotion. You hear so much noise. So, you know, they went inside to the temple and they began talking amongst themselves and hearing all kinds of noise coming within the doors of Jagannath's altar. They went and got the king, and they got the priest, the head priest. They woke them all up and brought them, and the king was concerned. There's some difficulty with Jagannath. Yes, let me come immediately. He quickly bathed and dressed, and they came, and they got to the doors, and they opened the gates, and there inside was Sachidevi, Lord Jagannath, all by himself. Now, the servants and the pujaris, much like some of these servants and pujaris nowadays, were a little mundane in their view. And they concluded, who is this thief? How has she gotten in the inner door? She's simply come to steal all the jewelry and gold of Lord Jagannath. And the many people that had collected during all this said, no, this can't be true. This is Sachi Devi. There's certainly some mystery here, something. So Sachi Devi just absorbed herself in thinking of Lord Krishna, seeing that there was some type of dilemma coming. She said, Krishna is so merciful to me. The Ganges has come to me, given me the bath I wanted, and brought me here to the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath. So the priest kept pressing, how did you get in here? What are you doing here? She couldn't give an answer. Neither would she. This was her personal devotional ecstasies. She wasn't going to share this. You know, devotees don't share their personal realizations like that. So they're, all right, we're taking you to jail. You're a thief. So they put her in the prison. So she was imprisoned in the dungeons of the palace to stand trial for her theft. So she didn't become upset at all. Mind wasn't weakened. She wasn't confused, wasn't disturbed. She just sat down and began chanting. She chanted endlessly. So anyway, everything calms down. Everybody goes back to bed. The king's laying in his palatial bed with his big fancy silk bolsters and his nice silk sheets and laying there. And all of a sudden, Lord Jagannath comes to him in a dream. And Lord Jagannath is not smiling. That big smile that we all desire to see on Lord Jagannath, it wasn't there. Lord Jagannath said very loudly, immediately, you release Sachidevi from your dungeons. She was in there because I personally wanted to arrange for her to come. I personally wanted to see that the Ganga would bring her into the temple to my lotus feet. If you want your life to be auspicious, then you, your pandas, the pujaris, you would all better go to her feet and pray for forgiveness. Go at once. Bring Ganga Mata Thakurani, which is now the name she's known by, in a golden chariot with drums and horns and procession. Bring in a royal procession to your palace. You should become a disciple of her after you have done this, along with all the priests and any other prominent person here in the temple. So having this dream, King woke up and, I mean, we already see earlier the belief he has in these dreams of Jagannath. So immediately he got all the pandas, he took his bath, woke them up, got them to bed, bum, 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 went to Sachidevi, fell at her feet, released her, begged for forgiveness, put her on the chariot, you know, bum, bum, had everybody there offer full obeisance. He's like this. So after she was received there and they're all, you know, begging, he took her to her cottage where she stays. And then he said to her, Jagannath has told me that I should come and take shelter of you, that you are a great devotee and I should receive diksha from you. And if I do not get initiation from you, my entire dynasty will be finished. This is a big deal if you're a king, your dynasty. So all the counselors are there, and they all say, we are going to fast and pray until you give us initiation. Ganga Mata Thakurani, as she's now known, she says, my guru has never told me to initiate. I cannot do this. I don't want any disciples anyway. So much bother. So that was that. That night, Jagannath came to her in her sleeping. Please, for me, you do this. You take these disciples. You make them your followers. Do this for me. This was Lord Jagannath's direct request to her. So, in her mind, waking and understanding this to all be the divine pastimes of Lord Jagannath, Sachidevi became very, very happy and joyful. Her heart was filled with divine love for Krishna upon being blessed in this way. And she called the king. She placed her hand on his head. She gave him all her blessings. And then, on the order of Jagannath, on the auspicious day, she initiated King Mukundadev with the 18-syllable Radha Krishna mantra. Along with all of his pujaris and all the court counselors, they all became her disciples. Now the king has to give Guru Dakshin. You know, who better to give Guru Dakshin than a king? So he wanted to give a big, large amount of land, and Sachimata says, no, I'm not taking any land. So he begged, you know, you have to give me something to do, something I can give to you, you know. So she finally said, all right, every day at noon, you can bring two containers of Mahaprasadam, one of rice and one of vegetables, some fresh cloth, and 160 paisa, which could be used for the service of the Vaishnavas. 160 paisa, big deal nowadays. Apparently back then it was a lot of money. 160 paisa, I don't even think 160 paisa, I don't think you can get the Lohi Bazaar on a rickshaw for 160 paisa. So from that day onward, everyone knew her as Ganga Mata Goswamini. And Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya's house became known as Ganga Mata Mutt. And even to this day, after the noon offering to Jagannath, the Mahaprasad is brought over to Ganga Mata Mutt. So the king then promised, he said, I will give some land for Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya and I will build a new temple here. I know that you have come on the instructions of your Gurudev to establish Sarvabhauma's house and I will assist you in this way. So he had a temple built. And as he arranged for the quarters of Ganga Mata Goswamini in the temple, she declined. She stayed in the small hut on the outside. And one day, a smarta Brahmin came to visit by the name of Mahidara. And he came to worship his ancestors on the banks of the Sweta Ganga. And he heard about the glories of Ganga Mata Goswamini. And he was very eager to have her darshan. So he showed great respect, and she showed him great respect when he came, and he equally bowed before her. She offered him a nice place to sit. And she asked, so what is your purpose in coming? And he began to explain the righteous reason for his coming, and that is to worship his ancestors and see to their deliverance. So seeing that he was, you know, very pious and very earnest in this effort, Gangamata Goswami explained to him the Siddhanta of Srimad Bhagavatam. It mentions that the Brahman was completely astonished by the voluminous levels of her understanding of the Bhagavatam. After this, he asked to take shelter at her lotus feet and become his disciple. And she initiated him also with the Radha Krishna Mantra. After his initiation, she instructed him that he should return to his hometown, Dhananjaipura, which is in Bengal. And he became very, very strong preacher of Harinam Sankirtan on behalf of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu all throughout Bengal. So in this way, Gangamata Goswami continued with giving her classes, and the residents of Puri continued to just love her more and more each day, and, you know, even very high advanced devotees would attend her lectures, you know. So one day, she was sitting in her courtyard, absorbed in chanting, remembering the pastimes of the Lord, and a Brahmin by the name of Chandra Sharma, he had come from Jaipur to see her. Now, that Brahmin was serving a deity by the name of Roy Kishore. And this deity is said to be none different than Krishna himself. So, the deity came in a dream to Chandra Sharma one day. You must take me to Puri and give me to Gangamata Goswami. Said, she will now serve me. If you don't do this, I'm going to curse you. Now, Lord forbid any of our deities should appear to us in dreams and say, if you don't give me away, I'm going to curse you. But apparently there was some cause for this. The deity continued on, you're not doing the service for me properly. Sometimes you make offerings to me. Sometimes you don't make offerings to me. Sometimes you give me a bath. Sometimes you don't give me a bath. Sometimes you offer RT. Sometimes you don't offer RT. You're not doing the service as you used to do before. So if you want to please me, go to Puri and give me to Gangamata Goswami. Otherwise, I'm cursing you and your whole dynasty and you'll all be finished. Wow. Woo. So the Brahmin then took his beautiful takoji, put him in a basket, and walked all the way to Puri. Now, Jaipur is a little further away than Vrindavan, so maybe 4 months. I bet he did some puja along the way. So he came there into the garden that day, and Gangamata Goswami sitting in her garden, she's chanting, and he approached her, and he said, Takoji has now come for your seva. Please take him and serve him. She said, what? I don't have any deity. Harinam is my deity. I'm in the mood of Manasa Seva in the line of Rupa Goswami. I cannot do this. I have no time for doing external worship. All of my worship is from my heart. The Brahmin became very worried. He knows he's going to get cursed. His whole dynasty. He says, no. You know, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? So Gangamata Goswami had a beautiful Tulsi garden. Had different types of jasmine bordering it, and many just, incredible Tulsi plants growing in it. So that night, the Brahmin went into the Tulsi garden and set the deity there and touched his feet and whoosh, took off. So about 4 o'clock the next morning, Roy Kishore, he's also known by the name Shyam Roy Krishna, he appeared to Gangamata. Why are you neglecting me? Said, I've come for your service, I've come for your love, I've come for your affection, and you're neglecting me. I'm thirsty, I'm so hungry. We've come all the way from Genesis, so maybe he didn't get fed the whole way. Come all the way from Jagannath Puri. So please take care of me now. Prepare something and offer it to me because I'm very hungry. So Gangamata Goswami was quite amazed by this. So she got up, took her bath, and went into the Tulsi garden. Sure enough, there in the middle of the Tulsi garden was this beautiful deity. She looked at him. She was so charmed by his sight. She pulled him up and embraced him to her chest, took him into the temple, and began worshiping him right then and there. That deity is still there in the Gangamata Mat in Puri there. So when the king heard about this pastime, he reflected. He said, yes. He said, I am very fortunate to have a spiritual master like this. So in the Gangamata Mat there in Puri, there's five sets of deities. Shishi Radha Rasika Roy, Shishi Radha Shyam Sundar, Shishi Radha Madan Mohan, Shishi Radha Vinod, and Shishi Radha Raman. And aside from this, there's three other deities there. There's the Damodar Shila of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. There's a dancing figure of Lord Gauranga. I don't know if he's dancing this way or this way. I've never had the darshan. And then there's a beautiful Gopal deity that's there. And those are all worshipped. To this day, you can go there and see the worship going on. So these are some of the pastimes of one of these highly advanced devotees in our line of acharyas that have the ability to empower us and enliven us with our endeavors to try to become Krishna conscious in a mere shadow of what they've got. So we'll finish there tonight. Thank you very much. Yes, Seisha Prabhu. Say that again. Yes, when that whole incident took place there with the Swetha Ganga, Ganga Mata Goswamini became her title then at that point. Yeah. That full name there. Yeah.
Does she have this type of succession?
I'm sure she must. I'm not familiar with it. I don't have any details, but I mean, you know, she initiated all these people, so there's got to be. This is one thing that Jai V. Jainath talked about, is that not all of the information, when Sital and I talk about this all the time, not all the information we'd like to know about our acharyas is so readily available. Well, what about, like one question is, how did the Braj Mohan deity get from Katori to Vrindavan? Well, there's really no history on that. You know, so there's a lot of questions about our line that, you know, we just have to wait till we go back to Godhead and we can ask these devotees directly. At least you all can. Then you can let me know. And tell me in a dream. Gangamata Goswamini ki.
What about the 16 devotees?
Yeah. Was already in Puri with Sarvabhauma. I thought, let's do that.
Now, he had a son too, right?
Yes. That son, which he is still worshiped. Yeah, I'm not sure where that is. I know Ruben Song.
Yeah.
Probably a picture of him. All right. Yeah, I'll look at it.